Welcome to Step Into Magic, your weekly online radio show on how to develop your psychic ability, deepen your spirituality, and find your own true purpose, presented by acclaimed medical intuitive, Josephine Lang. This broadcast is a part of the Wisdom and Intuition Network. This is Anthony Taylor, your host, and on behalf of Josephine, I'll be taking your calls and questions. This week's topic is three universal prayers. Help me, thank you, and silent union with the divine. For those of you who are new to our show, Josephine has been a clairvoyant healer for more than 25 years. During that time, she's helped thousands of people from around the world to heal from hard-to-diagnose and chronic health issues. She's also been a teacher and spiritual mentor for hundreds of people who treasure her insights, courage, and love.
Hello, everyone. I'm so delighted that you've joined me today. And one of my very favorite books is Houston Smith's The World's Religions. It's an incredible book. I think he published it in 1958. And in it, he discusses the three main types of prayer that are universal throughout the world and used in every religion. And they are the asking prayer, where we implore the divine for assistance, the most common one of which is, of course, help me, help. And next comes the gratitude prayer, which is the great thank you. And then finally we have the prayer of silent union with the divine, where we lose all sense of self and just delight in the very joy of our beingness, intent in concentration and one with everything in the present moment of now. I'm sure we've all experienced moments of that particular type of prayer. I know I have, and it's really quite extraordinary, and also quite common. It's a wonderful thing if we let ourselves. But before I go into these topics, the topics of these three types of prayers any further, I always like to begin our show with a spiritual agreement. And this was a gift to me by my dear friend and mentor, Jana Massey. And she gave it to all of us who used to come and listen to her and her teachings. And she welcomed us all to use it. So I welcome you to use it as well. It's a wonderful way for us to qualify our relationships. And so please join me in this agreement now. And it goes like this. Together we acknowledge that everything that we think, that we say, and that we do at this time will be of the highest good. And together we ask for truth, the understanding of that truth, and the wisdom to use it in our lives. Can you all agree?
I do.
Thank you, Tony, and thank you, everyone.
Josephine, before you go into today's topic, I'd just like to say that we received a lovely note of support from Stacy from Ohio. And she writes, Josephine, my deepest thank you for holding a loving space and graciously sharing your work and your experience. I adore you and always look forward to the show. Thank you for being love, allowing for exponential growth for ourselves and each other. Infinite love and gratitude. Stacy.
Oh, thank you, Stacy. That is so wonderful.
And then we had another lovely message from a listener on the Central Coast who wrote to say, looking forward to your broadcast Thursday. Thanks and God bless you, Josephine. Grace.
Thank you, Grace.
And we also received an inspiring message from a listener in the Bay Area who wrote, hi, Josephine. During lunch, I was reading your blog. I like the way you said, the idea of separation can be very dangerous. It is the source, after all, of war. It causes the them versus us mentality. When instead we see everyone and everything as part of the same whole, but delightfully and interestingly different, then the whole world becomes our family, and we are in love with everyone and everything. And then the listener went on to say, this reminded me of a quote that I have in my office. It's not our differences that divide us. It is our inability to recognize, accept, and celebrate those differences. And that quote was from Audre Lorde. Thank you, Josephine, he concludes, for sharing yourself and your wisdom.
Aw, thank you, everyone, for all of these really beautiful notes of love and gratitude. And thank you, Tony, for reading them out in your beautiful English accent. But now on to our topic of the month, which is prayer. And I consider prayer to be one of the four cornerstones for developing psychic ability, along with sanctuary, meditation, and dream interpretation. And I've done radio shows on those recently, so if you're interested in a little more information on those other three cornerstones, just go to the last month, just go to the radio archives section at the top of the website, at the top menu, and you can see the last few months will be there, and you'll be able to get a lot more information on those four cornerstones, which are, of course, on a foundation of self-love. And when we have that basis underneath us, the basis of self-love, with a study of our dreams to awaken our clairvoyant center and to bring messages from our higher self and from our lower self, as well as prayer to really connect us with the divine, and meditation so that we can really fine-tune our listening skills and listen to our thoughts and keep track of our thoughts and begin to discipline our mind, all done, of course, in a wonderful sanctuary that we create for ourselves. Then we automatically engage what I like to call the Great Triple Blessing. And the Great Triple Blessing is our psychic ability combined with our spirituality and our purpose. And I find that if we work on any one of those, the other two come along. That's why I call it the Great Triple Blessing, because they are all together. And when we have all of that happening, the foundation of self-love, the cornerstones, and the Great Triple Blessing engaged, then we really find ourselves in a self-actualized life, in exactly what we would love to create, in the highest form of ourself that we are creating here on Earth, as we be who we are. So it's a really wonderful little formula and a recipe for a delightful life. So today I'm really going to be focusing on the asking prayer as a part of the month of prayer. And Houston Smith, who I mentioned earlier, who wrote the book The World's Religions, he said that the asking prayer in its very simplest form is help me. And any version of imploring the divinity for help or for guidance will be qualified or will be considered an asking prayer. So that can be, oh gosh, I wish I could have, you know, whatever, or oh my, if only my son could, or, you know, any number of askings that we might come up with where we might implore the divine. And then I have refined a little version that I like to use. And it goes like this: Divine Spirit of my higher self, Creator, God of truth, God of love, grant me now, and then you fill in the blank of whatever it is that you need or desire. And I ask for this if it is in accordance with the highest good for myself and for all, and if it is in accordance with my own true purpose. And I ask that it be of no inconvenience to anyone. And I ask for this or something better, and I ordain it under grace. And I'm so very grateful. Thank you. And this little prayer is a wonderful little prayer for us to use because it does have these lovely qualifiers in it, because we don't always know what's best for us or for anyone else. And so if we ask for something like this or something better, then we're in good hands. And I think it's a good idea when we're using the asking prayer for manifesting in the world, that it's nice to start with really simple things like parking spaces or short lines in the grocery store. And I have usually will say something like, you know, if I'm going to use it for parking, I'll say something like, you know, Divine Spirit of my higher self, Creator, God of truth, God of love, grant me now a parking space near or adjacent to my destination, preferably in the shade, in a parking meter that maybe even has a little money on it. And I ask for this if it is in accordance with the highest good for myself and for all. That's very important. And also if it is in accordance with my true purpose. And I ask that it be of no inconvenience to anyone, because you don't want to muscle somebody out of a space. And I ask for this or something better, and I ordain it under grace, and I'm so grateful. Thank you. And so I just have that little thing memorized, and I just whip it out from time to time, and it helps me bring so much ease in my life. To just really pave the way in advance for me so that my very footsteps can follow on the tracks that have already been laid.
Well, that sounds wonderful, Josephine, but I must say that of all the four cornerstones, I think this is the one that I have the most difficulty with. And I'm sure it's to do, you know, with being told to pray at school, you know, when I was little, to a God I didn't really believe in or at all. If I did, I didn't respect. And I do remember we were told we had to recite the Lord's Prayer every morning at assembly at elementary school, and I don't look back on that fondly, and I think some of that's lingering on today, you know, when I start thinking about prayer.
Yeah, and you know, there are a lot of people who have become kind of alienated from the whole idea of God or from prayer, You know, as a child, I had the childhood sleeping prayer that I was taught, that I said every night my mom would come in and we would say, I would recite the prayer. And it was, you know, now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take.
Wow.
And, you know, I've got to tell you, it kind of scared me.
That's pretty scary.
It was. It was like, oh, you mean I might die while I'm asleep? And as a little kid, you know, I just really didn't have a handle on that. It also kind of became rote, though, you know, I mean, because it was every single night that we said it. And it's sweet and it's well-intentioned, but it did kind of, you know, have an effect on me a little bit. There were some nights when I was a little disconcerted by it. And we do have a lot of subconscious programming that goes in, like that very prayer, which went in very deep into my awareness as a child being said every day, and also a lot of cultural programming that comes in. Lots of people in our world, you know, get sort of uncomfortable for various reasons about the whole concept of God. And because of that, they might not be comfortable with prayer. But it is a part of how we learn how to listen to, you know, prayer is how we ask and commune with that higher self aspect of ourselves or commune with God. And that is how we really develop our psychic ability, because psychic ability and spirituality are directly tied together, as I mentioned, with that great triple blessing, along with our purpose. So if we do develop our spirituality, we naturally do develop our psychic ability. And in order to develop our psychic ability, we have to develop our spirituality. The spirituality is like a guard at the gate. It prevents us from going further with our psychic skills until we really have the groundwork of open, expansive love for everyone, as is the which is kind of what my version or my interpretation is of God or of the divine. So I feel like I was pretty lucky in my early experiences with the clergy, because I was in a Lutheran church. My mother was a Lutheran and my dad was an atheist, and so we would go to church with my mom. And the particular pastor that we had was a very gentle man, and he spoke more of the stories like the lion lying down with the lamb, as opposed to those hellfire and brimstone stories that so many people have. But I did have a few issues with God because, for instance, first of all, in the religious tradition that I grew up in, God was a man, and I'm a woman, so I was sort of excluded in all of divinity, you know, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. That was all in a male aspect. And then also, this one was really big for me when I found out from my, you know, family members who did go to church that animals did not go to heaven. I was very upset by that as a child because I loved my cats and dogs and I could see their souls and I could, you know, understand what their feelings and their intentions were. And they were very much a part of my family, just as my brothers and my mom and dad were. And so it was a very disconcerting thought. And I just really couldn't agree with that very much. And then also there was the whole, you know, lightning bolts of retribution thing, which I thought, really? You know, I don't know. But it was nice to have my father be an atheist, even though my mother was a Christian and a Lutheran. It just gave me a lot of choices. And one of the things that I love is what Neil Donald Walsh says in his Conversations with God. And he mentions that, you know, kind of universal experience that we sometimes have when we are studying religion or trying to understand God, is we might say something like, you know, I'm trying my hardest, God, but which scripture should I follow? I mean, the Vedas, the Upanishads, the Christian Bible, the Torah, the Talmud, the Bhagavad Gita, or the Quran, or the Buddhist Sutras? I mean, what should I do? And he said, God responded, and she said, you've got me all wrong. You don't have to do anything. And she said, in every moment, just be who you are. Create for yourself whatever version of you you would like to be. You don't have to do anything. And Neil goes on to say that God demands nothing and commands nothing, and that there's nothing that we have to do. But this is not what we're taught. A lot of religious precepts are well-meaning in their original intention, but, you know, one of my dearest friends, as an example, as a boy, he was Catholic, raised Catholic, and this was before Vatican II, when eating meat on a Friday was an actual mortal sin. It meant, you know, spending a life in hell. And unfortunately, his guileless mother, with no ill intention, forgot and made him a bologna sandwich when he was just 6 years old at school on the playground. He opened up his lunch and he ate half of the bologna sandwich before he realized, oh my God, it's a Friday. I've just created a mortal sin. I'm condemned to life in hell, you know, for all of eternity. And he didn't know what to do, so he took the bologna sandwich and he looked around on the playground and there was this deep, dark drain with a big grate on top of it. And he thought, I'll throw it down there. And so he did. But it just so happened that it was high noon and this beam of sunlight was going right down on the grate, on the drain. And even though it was dark and black in there with the wetness and the water, the bologna sandwich was caught in the sun and the white bread of the bologna sandwich stood out like a beacon. He thought, oh, my God, and then there was no way to retrieve it because it was down there in the grate, and what was he to do? So, you know, this is an example of how sometimes we can have irresponsible theology that can really cause a lot of mental anguish and concern in people. And so that's just, you know, one example of how something like that can happen, and people do get alienated from experiences like that. So...
So what advice would you give? You mean just to not use the word God, or, I mean, because it sounds like prayer is such a fundamental thing. We don't want to abandon prayer.
And nor do we want to abandon God either, or the concept of God.
Mm-hmm.
So I healed my own experience with my own alienation from God in several ways. First of all, I started using the word goddess because I thought, well, at least we can introduce the feminine. But that didn't feel quite right either. So even though I studied some of the different goddesses throughout time, and then I got a little look into the history to see how there was a vast and long goddess tradition before we came into the more patriarchal view of the masculine divinity. And so that kind of helped me to reconcile. And then one day I just finally decided, you know what, I'm just going to say that God is love, and that's what it's going to mean for me. And what really happened was during my, I would say, my late teens and my 20s, I kind of became more or less agnostic. In other words, I didn't really believe, but I didn't really not believe either. And then in my late 20s, I had a really bad head injury experience where I was in a terrible car accident, and shortly after the head injury, I decided to just get on my darling little horse, Duchess, and take a little tiny ride. And I thought, well, I'll just, you know, go slow and walk. But she was a very spirited mount, and as soon as I touched down on her back, she was like, ah, let's go. And she started off at a trot, and I felt my brains uncomfortably thumping around in there, and I thought, ooh, this can't be bad. And I thought, well, maybe a canter, a more lolling, you know, gait. And so we got into the canter, and I could feel and hear my brains go kerlump, flump, kerlump, flump, kerlump.
Oh, dear.
And I thought, oh, this is so bad. And so I slipped off, and during that phase of that injury, I couldn't sleep very well. So Frank and I were sleeping in separate rooms except on the weekends, and so this was a weekend, and so we were together. And I thought, in the dark of the night, as Frank was sleeping away, I thought, uh-oh. You know, I've just given myself about 40 major concussions, and this is not good. And the reason why you have a person rest in a head injury is so that they won't, you know, take a chance on concussion, because you can start internal bleeding. And when the bleeding is happening in a watery substance, like in the inside interior of the skull, you can bleed to death. And so I thought, oh, man, you know, this is a really bad idea. And Frank's most likely going to wake up next to a dead lady, and I don't want that to happen. And so I thought, what the hell, you know, I'm just going to get down on my knees here by the side of the bed. And, you know, God, if you exist, I don't even know. But in any case, you know, if you can just prevent that from happening, if you can just spare my life, I swear I'll do anything, whatever it is you want me to do. And with that, I went to bed and got back into bed and actually rested quite peacefully. And in the morning, I woke up. So that was a really good thing. And then it was like a day later that I got my first medical intuitive call from somebody that I didn't know who lived in Santa Barbara. And I had been working in secret and in private for maybe 8 or 10 years with Dr. Otto, working as a medical intuitive, but I didn't tell anybody about it because judgments were always so swift, and it was just too weird in the 1980s. This was before Carolyn Mace had hit the lecture circuit and coined the term medical intuitive, so I didn't even know what to call myself. So I just thought, well, you know, I'll just do it in private and I won't tell anybody about it. And then here comes this call. And my first reaction was like, oh my God, who got my number? How did that happen? I thought, I'm not going to call him back. And then I went into meditation, which is how we learn how to listen to our divine inspiration. And I heard very specifically in my inner ear the words that said, you said you would serve. And I was like, oh, that's right, I did. Well, this is it. You know, you take that call. So I did. And that started my whole career as a being available to the public as a medical intuitive. And I still was, you know, a little hesitant about it. I mean, I didn't advertise or anything. But from that one first call through word of mouth, I've been able to serve thousands of people. So it's been really a wonderful experience. And that moment of that meditation and that moment of that prayer really changed my whole view of God and made me realize my own part in the creation of my life, really forever. I mean, I've never really, you have these kind of pivotal moments sometimes in life. And maybe with that, Tony, you can show Frank's beautiful slide.
Certainly.
This is from the mythologist and religious scholar Joseph Campbell. And he said that God is a metaphor for the mystery that is beyond all categories of human thought. And I love that particular description because we know, for instance, that a fly can see better than we can with those amazing eyes that flies have, and that a dog can hear better than we can and can smell better. And so really it should come as no surprise that there's much beyond our perceptual capacity, including thought. And so if we look at God as a metaphor for the mystery that is beyond all categories of human thought, it really opens it up and it's like, okay, yeah, I can be a little humbled here and realize that, yeah, there is something that is really vast that is a part of our reality that I can't even perceive, just like I can't perceive vision like a fly does and I can't hear and smell like a dog does. So I can understand that there's something that I really can't perceive that is beyond my capacity for that kind of thought.
Josephine, we have a slight technical problem at the moment. I can't seem to get that slide to come up.
Oh, okay.
So I'll just apologize to everyone for that.
All right.
Perhaps you should read it again.
All right, I'll read it one more time. This is from Joseph Campbell. God is a metaphor for the mystery that is beyond all categories of human thought.
Okay, and you know what? Has you read it again? Instantly the button started working again.
Good.
And the slide is there.
Wonderful.
And when I do love that definition. And for me, when I think of God as, you know, like the mystery, that ineffable thing that we can never explain, which is the ground of everything, then I'm completely happy. I think it's just the idea of God as, you know, this white-bearded man up in the heavens that I have a problem.
Yeah, so isn't that a nice thing? So we can find our own way to the divine, however that is. And I'm so glad to hear it, Tony. That's wonderful. You know, my dear friend Susan refers to, she has a lovely saying that she uses for God, which is that God is all that is and all that is not. It's a nice, almost like a koan.
It is, isn't it?
You kind of have to sit there and think about that. How does that work? And then, you know, the Carl Jung, the famous Swiss founder of analytical psychology, and he said, I don't believe in God. I know God. I thought that was just so wonderful. And that's really what happens. When we really go deep into the experience of divinity, we come to know that which is really largely unknowable, but we get an idea. We can kind of move in towards it. And for me, like I mentioned, God is love. It's the ultimate creative source of the universe. For me, it's really free from any religious connections, but it can be connected to religions, but it doesn't have to be. And that really helped me to free myself to feel more comfortable with the idea of God. So a connection with the divine, I feel, is really essential for the development of our psychic ability because it's the divinity within each of us that is connected to the vastness of the divinity in everyone and throughout the universe. Our higher self is like, I love that analogy of the ocean, it's like the little drop of water in the vast ocean of knowing. And this is the part of us that brings us our inspirations. And as we follow these, as we honor those images of our inspirations, we develop not only our spirituality, but also our psychic ability. And so now I'm hoping that little slide button will work once more.
Oh, I'm sure it will. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that was, just a temporary little glitch.
Just a temporary little, it was just reminding us. Catch that moment. Pay attention.
Yeah, it's working.
Good. And so this slide says, prayer is how we ask, and meditation is how we listen. And I love that little bit there. So I like to assign homework assignments. And so for all of you who are listening, if you'd like, what I would love for you to do this week sometime is to take a moment in your sanctuary, which can be out in nature, and quiet yourself, and then using your intention, open your heart to the truth of who you really are and to what the divine is to you. Just let that come to you. And then just breathe it in and just be open to it. Yeah.
Hmm. Oh, I know I'm going to enjoy doing that, Josephine.
Good.
I do love these homework assignments that you give us.
Good.
And this one, I think it's going to, I'm particularly going to enjoy it.
Yeah, it's really nice. And, you know, those of us who spend time being, we get very creative if we just are just being who we are. It's one of the hallmarks of creativity in adulthood, the ability to just be. And when we just be, then we are connected with the original blueprint that we came in with that was divinely inspired in us as a from the creative source of the universe, which included us and is a part of us and is who we are. So it really puts us in connection with our own divinity, which is a part of that larger divinity that is throughout the universe. So this is... You know, this is a very powerful thing, this idea of prayer, to give yourself over to the divine. This one, like what I did, this, you know, if I can serve, just let me know how, whatever it is. It's really kind of a real mover and shaker. It can really change our lives. And it can also, like it did with me, lead you right into your purpose. And there is a beautiful little piece of prose by Gandhi that Frank also so kindly made a slide of for us today. And maybe you can put that one on now.
Certainly.
Great. So this one goes, God demands nothing less than complete self-surrender as the price for the only real freedom that is worth having. And when a person thus loses their self, that person immediately finds their self in the service of all that lives. Such service becomes their delight and recreation. They are now a new person, never weary of spending themselves in the service of God's creation. I just love that particular bit of prose, and I feel that it is one of the guiding forces in my life. I mean, when we completely give ourselves over like I did in that moment, that is the price that I had to pay for real freedom. For the freedom, the only real freedom, as Gandhi says, that is worth having. And that's a life that you really, truly want to live. They are one and the same. That surrender brings you what you really want most of all. And when we do that, we lose that sense of self in a way, but we immediately find ourselves through the service that we give to all that lives. And then that is... What I love is that it's our delight and our recreation. It's what we really, really, really want to do. And then we're a new person and we are never weary in the spending of ourselves in the service of God's creation. And that has been so true for me. I mean, I just really feel this energy that just flows through me all the time, day or night, long hours, and I'm just happy doing what I'm doing. It's an extraordinary experience. And Peace Pilgrim had a similar experience. She, found herself, as I was describing, I think, last week on the show, and she said, if you can use me for anything, please use me. And then she just found herself going on into her life as a pilgrim. And part of this is joy. It's very much a part of it. And so I like to say, stay in your joy. That's where that delight and recreation is. And Peace Pilgrim says, do all the good you are inspired to do each day and give it top priority in your life. That's really important, too. So now I'd like to go ahead and take a little time for an exercise. And so why don't we go ahead and just relax for a moment and close our eyes and just allow yourself to settle in a little bit. Get comfortable. Maybe if you're sitting in a chair, you want to put your feet both flat on the ground. And, of course, if you're driving a car, save this exercise for later. And then think back over your life and what you like to do. And take a look at today and just see if there's anything that you've been inspired to do today. Something that you know that would bring you delight, that would make you feel really good inside. Just remember back through the day. Was there anything that you were inspired to do that you haven't yet done? Make a mental note of what it might be. Remember it. And now promise yourself that if it's at all possible, sometime this week, you'll give it top priority. And then go ahead and begin to allow yourself to come back into your normal waking consciousness. Move your body a little bit. Stretch your arms. Open your eyes if you've closed them. And just allow yourself to remember what that inspiration might be. Know that that's your higher self speaking to you. That is the road that lies before you. That if you follow it, it will bring you a life of grace and ease and joy, delight and recreation. Boundless energy. It's wonderful. So now, I'm going to give another little homework assignment.
Oh, good.
What I would like to ask you all to do is tomorrow morning, when you wake up, or if not tomorrow morning, then sometime this week, ask yourself first thing in the morning, right when you first wake up, open your eyes, just say to yourself, what would I love to do today? And just make a note of that. And then if you can, follow through. Even if it's something as simple as, I just like to spend the whole day in bed and just resting for a change. Well, maybe you can make arrangements to do that on the weekend. Because that is how we start. We start by listening to our inspirations and following through with them and then taking action and moving ahead on them. And then more inspirations. You know, the more you follow through with something, the more it comes. So as they say, gratitude brings more blessings. The same thing is if we follow through with our inspirations, we get more inspirations. So that's the voice of our higher self, our inspiration. And wonderful thing about it, it's easy to tell because it's always neutral and compassionate. It's not going to have that voice of should or shame or blame. It's going to be something that feels just perfectly lovely, like slipping into a warm bath full of water. It always feels so, so good. So another little saying that has to do with the sound and the quality of this voice is our next slide, and perhaps you could put that on for us, Tony.
Certainly.
This is a quote from another one of my favorite teachers. Her name is Iyanla Van Zandt, and she said, "The sheep know the voice of the shepherd." And I think that's so sweet. It's such a nice analogy. It's like, oh, yes, that's familiar. It's trustworthy. I know it's going to take care of me. It's good. It feels just right. Isn't that beautiful?
It is. And I think I've actually got much better at this particular kind of discernment than I used to be.
Good.
Because obviously we all have lots of voices in our mind the whole time and ideas are coming to us all the time.
Yeah.
But I think for me now there's a particular feeling, and it's kind of like I hear a voice and the thought of acting on that voice, I feel good. I feel more me. I feel more complete. It just feels right.
Yeah.
The comfortableness in it.
Yeah.
And then I'll go that way, or that will be my intention anyway. I don't always live up to it, but
right.
But I think I'm slowly mastering this now, and you know, and letting some voices just ignore them.
Good, good. Isn't that great? Doesn't it feel good?
Mm.
It's so wonderful. Well, thank you. I'm so glad you shared that, Tony.
Well, thank you, Josephine. Mm-hmm. It's all down to you. Josephine, why don't you just saying something about sheep?
Oh, yes, that's right. Thank you very much
before
for reminding me.
Distracted with all the other things.
Yes, I wanted to share a little bit about a dear friend of mine, Cassandra, who has since passed away, but she was an animal communicator. And she was one of those folks who, so many of us are like this, where we have a real connection with animals in our childhood, in our youth. And then as we grow older, we kind of grow out of that and let that go. Well, she didn't grow out of it. She kept it because the people that she was around were not always all that comfortable to be with, and so she found herself much more comfortable in the company of her animal friends. And those of us who've had experiences like that with animals, we know that animals have souls. We know that animals are a part of divinity, and we see it in them as well. And Cassandra, I first contacted her because she was an animal communicator, and I had some questions about my horse, Duchess, and then we both being psychics kind of, you know, had a lot in common, and we became very good friends, and we started doing lunches together and things. It was so much fun to spend time with her because at any moment she was so practiced at tuning into the minds of animals that she could really come up with deep and meaningful, thoughtful conversations with them that were extraordinary and often very surprising. And for me, that's one of the ways that I really know that I've stepped out of what my own preconceived ideas and thought patterns are in a communication with another energy, is if I get something, an interesting, wonderful response that is something that I don't think I myself would have thought of. And that was always the case with Cassandra. And I remember one time we were out to lunch and we were walking along this pretty little area next to the restaurant where there were some hebes in full bloom. That's a type of a flowering shrub that the bees just love, hebes. And so there were, oh gosh, there must have been 30 or 40 bees, right, that we were standing against along a little railing, a little fence railing. And the bees were busy working this shrub. And I just thought, gosh, you know, Cassandra, I wonder, do bees know God? And she said, you know, I said, oh, have you ever talked to a bee? And she said, no, Josephine, what do you want to know? And I said, well, I'd really like to know, do bees know God? And she said, well, let me ask one. And so right away, you know, amongst this flurry of busy bee activity, one bee comes right up to us, stops in midair, hovering like a little helicopter right there, just about maybe 12 inches in front of both of our foreheads. It's like alert and at attention. Yes, what do you want to know? And she's asking silently with her mind. And then the bee flies away and she turns to me. And so the question was, you know, do bees know God? And she turns to me and said, the bee said, we all serve the one. And so with that, could you perhaps show that next slide?
Certainly. It's a lovely story.
I think that was so profound for me to hear those words. We all serve the one. And a bee, you know, you think busy is a bee. And then just like Gandhi's prayer, you know, when you fully surrender yourself, you know, you lose yourself in service of all that lives, and that service becomes your delight and your recreation. And there you are, one with divinity, moving ahead. And all as little, the busy little bees serving the one divine. I just love that story. And there was another wonderful story that happened with Cassandra, and this was with our dog, Lucky. So this was like, I can't remember, before or after one of our luncheon dates. And Cassandra came over to the house, and Lucky just naturally, she just loved Cassandra because Cassandra was an animal lover. And Lucky was a real ball dog. She was a border collie, so she loved to have something to do. She loved to have a job, and one of her jobs was to play with her ball and chase her ball. And so Cassandra sat down on the sofa, and Lucky came up to her with her ball in her mouth, and, you know, it was a tennis ball, so she's kind of like, kafung, kafung, you know, kind of chewing on it, kafung, kafung. And she put her head right on Cassandra's knees and right in her lap, and kafung, kafung. And because Cassandra called her over to see if she wanted to talk, because, I had a question. And so, and Cassandra was so much better at it. I mean, I can do a little bit of animal communication myself, but she was so good at it, I always loved to have her do it. And my question was, you know, do animals pray? So she called Lucky over, and Lucky's got the ball there, and she goes silent, and she poses the question to Lucky. And then we watch as Lucky backs off, lays down on the floor, on the living room floor, she still has her ball in her mouth, she rolls over onto her back, and then using her forepaws, she closes them in on the ball on her mouth, and she grabs the ball and starts to raise it up, and now she's balancing. So she's on her back with her back legs splayed open to kind of help her hold her balance, and she's lifting this ball up high overhead. She's on her back, kind of tipping to the left, tipping to the right, and then she drops down one paw, which lets the her other paw throw the ball for herself down the hall. And she would do this sometimes, so this was not the first time we'd seen it, but it was the first time we'd seen it in response to a question. And so she goes charging off down the hall after the ball, slide, stop, grabs the ball, comes running back proudly, trot, 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 comes right back to Cassandra, puts the ball back in her knees and starts crum, 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 and then she gets quiet for a minute, and Cassandra turns to me and she said, Lucky said that every thought is a prayer. And so in response to my question, do animals pray? Lucky said, every thought is a prayer. And I loved that one so much that we, Frank and I, had a bumper sticker made out of that, and it's on our truck.
It is, right? It's right outside now, isn't it?
It's right outside. So, and we've, Frank made us up a lovely slide for that one, too. So we have all we all serve the one from the bee, and every thought is a prayer from Lucky the love dog. Isn't that great?
Yeah, and it really does invite you to pay close attention to your thoughts.
Not only that, but also to realize that the divine is everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's within all of us. And, yeah, pay close attention to our thoughts. So, like we were talking about last week, about worry, because worry is a little bit of a negative prayer that can be kind of one that we don't so much want to participate in. And my friend Patrick called today to say that he had a lovely quote about worry. So he was going to maybe send it on as an email, or he thought maybe he might be able to call it in. We'll see if he does. But in any case, that's part of why we practice meditation, so that we can learn how to really watch our thoughts. And like as Louise says, and here's another slide for us all, if you wouldn't mind putting that on.
Certainly.
It says, our thoughts control our lives, and the only thing we need to control is our thoughts. I think that's such a beautiful saying that Louise reminds us, that we really want to pay attention to our thoughts, and that every thought is a prayer. And, you know, I can remember once we were driving down the road and somebody said to us, you know, our window was down and they were in the car next to us and they said, you know, your bumper sticker is a little disconcerting there with every thought is a prayer. I said, well, yeah, you want to pay attention to those thoughts because we don't want to have negative thoughts that are constantly, you know, weighing down our energy field and creating those negative things instead of the positive things. We want to be as positive as possible.
Josephine, we do actually have a caller on the line now.
Oh, good.
This could well be Patrick.
Oh, I hope it is.
Welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, it is Patrick. Hi, thank you
Hello,
for calling
Josephine.
In. Hello.
Well, I did, in fact, send that quote over. I sent it to Frank's email address today.
Oh,
but
that's
I'd be happy to
get
recite it now.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be wonderful.
And it's by an unknown author, and it goes like this. Worry is the price you... let me restart. Worry is the interest you pay in advance for a debt you may never owe.
Wow, isn't that great? Worry is the interest you pay in advance for a debt that you may never owe.
Wow. That's right.
Wow. That's great, Patrick. Thank you
so
much
for calling with me
in.
Day after day. Yes.
Yeah, I bet.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's a good one, isn't it?
It's
and
a good
let's
one for me personally.
What's
yeah.
that?
It's a good one for me personally because, you know, I've grew up in a family of worry warts, so, you know, worry has been part of our experience. So,
yeah.
But I realize that most things that you worry about never happen, so it's kind of
yeah,
a waste
it's
of
so
time.
True. It is, and it kind of points us in that worry direction as well, so it's nice just not to even go there. Thank you so much for calling that in, Patrick.
Okay.
I really appreciate it.
I enjoy the show very much. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. You're
right.
Welcome. Bye now.
Bye now.
Bye. That was very nice.
Yes. Worry is the interest you pay in advance for a debt you may never owe.
Mm.
Yeah, that's really something, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a good one. So, yeah, we talk often about affirmations and holding thoughts positively. And, you know, one point to realize is that if we do our affirmations for, let's say, devotedly 2 to 3 minutes in the morning and 2 to 3 minutes in the afternoon, but then we spend the whole day worrying and, you know, carrying this weight of all of these negative thought forms, those 2 little minutes in the morning and the afternoon are not enough to override that weight of negative energy. And, you know, that curmudgeon that we all have within us, we learned that in our culture, that we say that our negative self-talk is so often, you know, really troublesome. It's, you know, I'm so stupid, or I never have enough, or, oh, my body looks terrible, my nose is crooked. Why did I do that, or why didn't I do that? You know, it's just all day long. And if we do that, you know, realizing that our whole life is a prayer, then we're creating, I think, really a part of our a huge next step in our human evolution is paying attention to catching our negative inner self-talk and converting it into something that is much more wholesome. And again, here we don't want to resist completely because, you know, what we resist persists. So what is a great trick to do is to catch the negative thought, realize we're having it, and then have ready 4 or 5 really good thoughts that we'd rather think instead. You know, like instead of saying, oh, my body looks terrible, say, I love my body. It's beautiful. It performs so wonderfully, and it does my every bidding, and look at how great I look. Or you know, instead of, I'm so stupid, to think, you know, I do everything so nicely during the course of the day. I can really, you know, handle all of my chores and get my thoughts organized. And, you know, that's true. That is very true. So just coming up with something else that is true really helps us to overcome those negative thoughts. And, you know, when we look at our life as a prayer, our whole life as a prayer, I feel that the whole meaning of life is to embody the divine, to really create ourselves as a part of the divine. And when we do grab a hold of our thoughts and our subsequent beliefs, which come with our thoughts, our lives will change in a heartbeat. They change instantly. And that the importance of that inner peace is so vital. And meditation really helps us to grow our minds, and prayer helps us to grow our divinity. And together they help us to create inner peace as we learn how to let go of our worrying thoughts and move into more positive thoughts. And, you know, that's what we want to try to do, to realize that every thought is a prayer and let those thoughts be positive. We want to create positive lives for ourselves and for others. So here's some examples of some beautiful affirmations that I like to say to myself, and I say these a lot. And some of them come from Louise Hay, who is just the queen of self-love, and her beautiful book, You Can Heal Your Life. And so I like to say, in this life of mine, everything is perfect, whole, and complete. I love my life, and my life loves me. I am open and receptive to all good. The gateways to wisdom and knowledge are always open to me. Only good lies before me. It's my body's nature to heal itself perfectly. Everything is working out for itself, working itself out for the highest good. Everything in our world is working itself out for the highest good. We are learning and we are growing, and we know that life is here for us and will supply us with everything that we need. And I could go on. You know, I often do.
But, well, I have a question there, Josephine. So, you know, all these affirmations, are they usually about the self, or can you make them about other people too? So, for example, could I make them, say, about my son or my mom?
You know? Oh, yes. It's just like prayer. You know, but I always like to keep it kind of general when I'm doing for others, because, and also for myself, because we don't want to get too attached to any specific outcome, because often things are kind of slightly disguised, you know, like I always wanted to live on water. I thought, you know, wherever I live, I want to live on water. And I had in mind, you know, a lake or a really big river or something like that. And then we moved into this house here on Little Garden Creek, and it's kind of contained in a bunch of concrete blocks. And it took me about 3 or 4 years to really realize, you know what, I live on water. Sides of the house. That's pretty good. I mean, it wasn't a lake with a boat, sort of like what I had in mind, but hey, it's water. And, you know, we don't want to be too specific. We want to just be open to whatever is going to come. And, you know, we humans, we have that sort of limited worldview. And so if we get specific, then it's sort of like, you know, well, why not let ourselves see like a fly with a much wider potential for sight? And so, you know, we kind of want to lighten our grasp on that when we're praying for others or for ourselves. And so also I always like to use those qualifiers, you know, like I mentioned in the asking prayer, that it be of no inconvenience to anyone, or that I'm asking for this or something better. And that just gives us over to the broader, higher viewpoint, which is full of possibilities that we, you know, might not be able to see ourselves or might not ever consider, like Gandhi's surrender prayer. You know, thy will be my will is what that prayer really is all about. And Jana, my spiritual teacher, used to speak of the great spiritual law of non-interference. And so basically what we want to do is hold good thoughts for others, but hold them lightly and turn it over to divine hands to sort out the details. You know, it's funny because, and I often like to say this, we mistakenly think that God needs our help in fixing other people. But really, the only person we need to fix is ourselves. And we can support others with our positive thoughts and our uplifting ideas for them. But we just need to know that all of our experiences are for our greater growth and learning, even the tough ones, and in fact, especially the tough ones. They get us to change. They're tough, but we grow through them. And we don't necessarily want to pray to eliminate other people's problems. Instead, we want to see their problems as their unique gifts in life. And we can certainly help, and absolutely, when we feel motivated to help, we should jump right in there. But we also need to realize that our difficulties are our lessons, and they're here to help us solve life's problems. So when we do pray for someone, we can ask if it's in accordance with their own highest good and their own true purpose. And I like to ask, like I said, for this or something better. And also, too, if something's really urgent, another thing that Jana taught us was to say, angels here now. And that's what I do whenever I don't really know what to do in a situation. I just say to myself silently, angels here now. And, you know, if you don't believe in angels, you could say something else. Did divine spirit here now, or however, whatever version of the divine you want, just call it in. And then I just allow that to take place in my mind's eye, and I just know in my heart that everything will get sorted out. And then I just wait and see how things begin to unfold, knowing that we have divine assistance. And we always have divine assistance anyway, but when we call it in, I think it just sort of gives it that little extra strength, that invitation. Because we do need to ask, and so often we forget to ask. And then, with gratitude, whatever manifests, we just let it go. And that brings us to that next slide, then, Tony, if you wouldn't mind. And these are
certainly.
These are the three answers to the asking prayer. And I forget now where I learned this, but, oh, I sure do enjoy it. And the first one is, yes, of course, whatever you want. Yeah, you can have it. And the second one is, yes, but later. Sometimes we need to wait a little bit till the time is just right. Maybe the new apartment that we're looking for isn't quite finished being built, or that, you know, perfect vehicle for us to, you know, way for us to get to have our European travel isn't quite ready for us. So we just have to wait a little bit. And then the third one, no, I have something better for you.
Now, I really do like that one.
I do,
and I think I had a little bit of that coming back to America a couple of years ago. There was a job that I'd applied for, which everything, all these coincidences came together to make it seem like I would get this job, and I thought I had to get this job, and then I didn't get it.
Oh.
And I thought, what? Actually, it was such a blessing in disguise, really.
Isn't that great?
Yep, so that's how I'm able to be here now, and I'm so glad I am.
Oh, me too. So, yeah, you know, I had my parents said, you know, well, you've got to get an education and you've got to have a degree and you've got to have a job. And so I dutifully did all this. And I'm sure that many of you listening have had this very similar scenario, you know, of something that you felt that you had to do that was other people's ideas. And they were good ideas and well-meaning. But then you sort of headed out on that path like I did. I got my degree in horticulture and I started mowing lawns and I was a gardener and I was happy enough doing all that. But really, Spirit had in mind for me a little path correction. Divine Will had something a little deeper in mind for me. And so, boom, here's a big injury. You're in bed for a year. And then, boom, here's another big injury. You're in bed for another year. And, you know, that is how I came to find my cornerstones of how to develop our self-actualized life and the foundation of self-love. And I've really come to see that these stinkers can be really very, very bright lights in our life. And they are, that's how we find our inspirations and our joy and the joy to lead our lives. So, you know, it's sometimes our problems can be our greatest blessings.
Oh, I know that's certainly true. Now, Josephine, I know there's a lot more you need to say, but we are getting very near now to the end of the show. Just a little warning that we don't have very long to go.
All right. Well, I'm sure we can say whatever was in mind for another time.
So do you want to begin wrapping it up? Or
yes,
you...
we probably better, because
okay.
I think you're right.
Okay. Well, it's such a shame.
We'll get to it another time.
Because I know you've got so many wonderful things to say. So let me just say then that the link to next week's show can be found on Josephine's website at stepintomagic.com. Just click on the top menu, radio. And if you have a question or you would like to be included in our weekly newsletter, just go to the contact page on Josephine's website. Again, that's stepintomagic.com and send us a message. So, Josephine, any parting words that you'd like to share?
Oh, yes, and thank you so very much for that, Tony. So when we are in prayer, we are connected with our higher self, which is our direct line to the divine. And this is what I think the meaning of life is all about, embodying the divine, becoming the very highest expression of who we already are. And that's what happens when we're in prayer. Not only can every thought be a prayer, but every moment of our life can be a prayer as well. So in closing, I'd like to thank all of you so very much for giving me the gift of your time. And I'd like to finish with this little blessing, which is that as our gifts are given in love, they are received in love. And we honor their wise use and their increase for all concerned. And so it is.
Thank you so much for that, Josephine. As always, it's been a real pleasure talking with you. And I trust that everyone listening has learned lots about the asking prayer. This has been show number P-1.14. And if you've enjoyed the show, we really hope that you will tell your friends. And we look forward to having all of you join us again next week when Josephine will be talking about how prayers of gratitude can transform our lives in such positive ways.
Tony and I wish you all insight, wisdom, and magic as you pursue the journey of inner knowing. And I hold you all in light and in love. Thank you so much for listening. This is Josephine Lang. Until next week, good night.